tough day to be a Skittle.
Did you see the company responded? I'm not going to get political, but this is not a representation. Candy is not like people. It's not the same.
That's right. The it's the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Judy Pilek on the news. Kevin Powell on the disaster of sports. And Violetta Pattermedic on the joy of traffic compared to the disaster of sports. Skittles is owned by Mars Global, and which is, you know, the old M&M Mars. Mm-hmm. You go to the headquarters. They were showing pictures of the headquarters today. And they've got two M&Ms. The one with the glasses.
You like in the when you walk in?
Mm-hmm. Up on the awning on the way in, or, you know, the
like giant
portico.
Giant M&Ms. Mm-hmm. Maybe be a cool place to visit.
So you're walking in, big M&Ms sitting there welcoming you, waving at you as you're coming in.
Fun.
Yeah, fun. It's candy. And Donald Trump Jr., what he did was he retweeted a meme. Which has been the failing of many of the Trumps throughout this campaign, is they see something on social media that they like.
Or they think it's sort of cute, and then they own it, and they slap their campaign logo onto it. Which is what they did with this one, which took it even farther than just retweeting it.
Yes, bad move, I think, on their part. Bad move on... And sometimes they'll retweet people. They don't realize who they're retweeting to give credit to somebody who said something great. And it turns out it's Heinrich Himmler. When they retweeted it, how was I supposed to know? Okay, I didn't know. I thought Himmler was dead.
Right.
So,
and you might have thought it was cute and gives you a chuckle, but I think when he retweeted it and put the Trump Pence logo across it, that's where people started to say, "Wait a minute."
Yeah, and Trump Pence, make America great again. Do you notice that Trump is 5 times larger than Pence in font? They're making Pence smaller by the day.
I wonder if he's
and he's the hardest working guy. Well, he's the hardest working guy in the whole campaign. He's everywhere. He goes to 1 million things a day, and he has to answer for all the stupid things they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I love watching that sometimes when there's sort of these things said that seem fairly indefensible, and that he just sort of takes it, pivots, and they all are doing it. All of them are doing it right now. This is, you know, political season. All the surrogates are out there spinning that stuff. But sometimes it's just kind of fun to watch.
And then Donald Trump Jr. says this image, for those who've not seen it, it's a image that says, if I had a bowl of Skittles and you told me just 3 would kill you, would you take a handful? That's our Syrian refugee policy problem.
Meaning that somehow the percentage of refugees would end up killing us from Syria.
Right. That is the idea here.
Seems like a pretty strong percentage to begin with when you're talking about a handful, but okay, then, you know, but then...
Or a bowl full and 3. Either way, but it's a reference to the Skittles. I mean, it's a third grade math problem. It's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. A bowl full of Skittles. And it's condescending. It's not accurate. As a matter of fact, all of these cases, whether you look at San Bernardino or just what happened in New York and New Jersey now and Linden, New Jersey, you look at all these are American citizens. These are not Syrian refugees, and there is a Syrian refugee crisis.
In Minnesota, I think he was initially a refugee from Somalia who became a citizen.
And what do you do there? Remember the Somalian, remember when we were liberating people from that IDEED guy in Somalia and what happened in Mogadishu and all the rest of the, do we recall all of that?
The humanitarian crisis and the people needed help, and then now we're seeing that in Syria. The response from the company, Skittles, which was a very carefully worded statement from their VP of Corporate Affairs, said, Skittles are candy, refugees are people. We don't feel it's an appropriate analogy. We're going to respectfully refrain from further commentary.
Yes. Good on them.
Probably good call.
All right. There's also, I thought this was pretty good, too. Today on Politico, Howard Schweitzer, who was a pretty famous guy in government and economics, has written an opinion piece in which he 7 reasons why Donald Trump would hate being president of the United States. The growing conventional wisdom about Donald Trump and his flailing campaign is that the candidate is sabotaging his own bid for the White House. As outlandish as that may seem on its face, there are reasons that may be true.
Although I think the last 2 weeks are the least proof of that. You would say before, when he was firing off about everybody, It was like, is he just trying to get out? Now he's more on script than we've seen in the past.
As someone who has never worked in Washington, never obtained a security clearance, never received an ethics briefing, and never assembled a team of experienced policy aides, Trump will be in for the shock of his life when he realizes that starting January 20th, mm-hmm. how much harder and different running a government is than running a private business.
Right. You can't tell him what to do. You can't tell Congress what to do.
He will hate the presidency so much so that if he won the White House, he would be sorely tempted to quit before his term even ends. Here are the seven reasons why. One, okay. You're never fired. Presumably, Trump thinks he can run the government like he runs The Apprentice, telling people that he deems not up to snuff that they're fired. Unfortunately, civil servants can't just be fired.
That's true.
You have to manage the bureaucracy. I know you want to change that, but that's not necessarily going to change. And then and the other piece, too, is that when you hire somebody, they have to go through the Senate vetting, which he is likely to lose here. He's likely to lose the Senate, even if he wins the presidency. That's likely to go Democrat for moving forward. So then he's going to have a problem getting a lot of his appointees through. But then once he fires the appointees, that becomes a sign of weakness. That if he appoints people, he can't just fire him because now everybody's watching every move here. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not like you can just fire some guy who's running his hotel division or his paper towel division or whatever it is that he has.
Well, it's a very different role, isn't it? I mean, a CEO can do that. A CEO can fire whoever they want, barring contracts. And so there's an HR process, but it's nothing like the civil servant process.
Number two, Congress will drive him insane. Congress moves at its own slow pace, and he favors snap judgments and bold declarations. Congress will cause him more madness than he could possibly imagine.
I think that's true.
Number three, he'll be investigated to death. As a private businessman, that is absolutely true because everybody's going to be looking into everything that his companies have ever done, including the people will be finding the audits. They'll be finding the stuff that, because here's the thing, when he's not releasing the information about what his potential conflicts of interest are, mm-hmm. that means that there are conflicts of interest. If you didn't have conflicts of interest, you would release it. But then he says he's not going to put it in a blind trust. He's going to walk away from all of it and let his kids run it, which is traditionally not how it's done either, because he's still then. But he would know what's in it. He knows what his relationships are with companies that are doing business overseas or whatever it happens to be, or with the
right.
United States government.
And he'd be aware of, transactions happening naturally. He just would. It would be difficult to create that distance.
The judges will relentlessly question his executive orders. You know how he doesn't like judges already. They're Mexican, okay? Mexican. I'm building a wall. And he's a Mexican. See, I wish I were not quoting him directly there and rather fondly, because then I would be, that'd be better. The boredom factor. He's not going to like standing up at ceremonial functions. Remember when
yeah.
he had to stand there with the Mexican president and he looked like he wanted to kill himself?
Yeah, he sort of looks like that bored child, in church kind of look. He kind of was like, do I have to be here? Like, when is this going to end?
The number six is the unquenchable beast at his door. Trump doesn't handle criticism well, and that's all that the media and political opponents will do for him for the next 4 years. And having to be the healer in chief. Imagine when there's trouble. Like Bill Clinton, I thought his finest moment was in Oklahoma City. Or George W. Bush at 9/11. Or mm-hmm. Barack Obama after Dallas. Or any of those. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine him going and trying to be an empathetic person? He doesn't have any empathy for anybody. I prefer people who didn't get shot, okay? Who are the winners here?
Winners, right. Who survived, we'll support them.
Yeah, right.